Well, colleagues, good evening. I have for you perhaps the most important recommendation, certainly that I've made in my career, and you would have to determine if it's the most important one that you've ever had to make a decision about. And that is, under my report, I'm going to have two items. The first item is presenting to you with key members of my staff who lead these departments around these topics. We'll present to you our recommendation for reopening schools for the 2020-2021 year. The goal is to hear presentation and I expect less than 30 minutes for us to have a robust discussion about it and hear your comments, questions, concerns, whatever you want to talk about. And then the goal this evening, colleagues, is we need to make a decision. We need to make a decision for the community, for our parents, for our students, for our staff. It's time. And what I would ask is that you hear us, hear our presentation, jot your notes beside the topic. There'll be seven main topics or parts of the proposal. And then we'll have questions and discussion and so forth after. That way, and again, this is my recommendation to you, that way the community can hear one continuous flow of a presentation, and then they can hear you with your discussion part. And I just think it'll be clearer for the community if they hear us all at once. And so we're prepared to do that if you agree. Agreed?
Yes, okay. Dr. Cash, thank you. We're ready. Okay.
Thank you. So colleagues, I have all of the executive team here, and I'm sure because of the sacredness of the moment, we have a lot of listeners this evening. I'm going to be proposing a remote learning only start to the school year with us examining the progress and effectiveness of that start after a period of about 4 weeks to 6 weeks. The topics are included in the handout that you may have, or Admir, if you could put the slide presentation up so I can begin to speak to it. I will begin the presentation with a scientific basis, an overview of how we came to this consensus decision or consensus recommendation at this point. And I say consensus because of the effort, the deliberate and systematic way that we went about this process. Next slide, please. Admir, there you go, thank you. So first I'll start with a scientific basis, an overview of how we reached the decision. Proposal, my apologies. We then will have three parts that are very important for a remote only start, where our chief technology officer extraordinaire, Myra Burden, will present assessing technology needs, internet access, and provision of computers. Ann Botticelli, our extraordinary chief of academic affairs, will lead with the remote learning part of our reopening plan, And then she will be followed by Jim Weimer, who will talk briefly about the main points or parts of the safety and operations plan, because even though it will be a remote start, we will have staff reporting to the buildings. And so those protocols will have to be very clear and implemented, effectively executed. And then finally, we will talk about an ongoing communications plan for this start and this part of the start of the school year, as well as going forward. And we want to make sure that we have a very, very clear, robust set of strategies to continue to communicate with our community. And Eleanor Calla, our communications director, will share that part. So those are the seven elements, and I will start with the scientific basis and overview, as well as make a few other main points that draw us to this extraordinary moment this evening. I think the first part that I want to say is that we are prepared as we can be. So preparedness is hard work and never optimum in a situation like this. But we have not sat on our thumbs at all. We have been working fully since March 18th on this work. I have not had a vacation since last December, and none of our executive team have either. And we don't intend to take one until we are off to a sound start to the school year. So preparedness, I want you to be clear that we are not unprepared. We are highly prepared, and we're prepared as we possibly can be given the circumstances. Second point, expectations. We have high expectations for our work. We will continue to have the very highest set of expectations for academic rigor in a remote learning environment, for continued access to all of the classes, advanced and honors, all of it, the like, CTE, music, art, multilingual education, and so forth in a remote environment. So our expectations remain high for access, equity, opportunity, and quality. They have not changed. I want to say also that we are extremely sensitive. I worry on end about all of the issues that our families and our students face on a daily basis, as well as have faced over the last 6 months. I have spent an enormous amount of my time researching COVID-19, how has it impacted globally other countries, how has impacted us here in the United States, state by state, city by city, district by district. And it is the most horrible Solomon's choice that we would have to make in a peaceful and in a democratic society. I can't imagine any other decision that is more difficult than this one. And yet, children need to be back in school. Children, our children, all of our children need to continue their learning at high levels in a highly competitive global society. They cannot lose ground. They must make up ground and then gain ground. The issues of social emotional learning and trauma that our students have been through, our families need help with that, and they need us to help them. Each family, each student, case by case, every single child, in every single way. Our educators want our children back with them in school, remote, hybrid, in person. Otherwise, we want our children. We need them back with us on a daily basis. It is too important to society for education to be overlooked. And yet, in many ways, during the COVID shutdown period, education as an essential sector has been overlooked, unfortunately. And I think we learned a hard lesson over these past 6 months or so, that education may in fact be the most essential sector in our democracy and in our economy. So it needs more support than ever, not less. More resources than ever, not less, to help our children and our families' needs, particularly in a large, complex, urban education system like the Buffalo Public Schools. Tonight, I want to be clear that Buffalo Public Schools and many of the large urban school systems in the country, we have a different kind of worry that COVID-19 is teaching us. It is teaching us, for example, that while we may be in a county or we may be in a state, Buffalo Public Schools, made up primarily of the zip codes 14211, 14212, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, largely Black and brown children and families in high poverty communities, we are finding that we suffer in our communities at a disproportionate level, severely disproportionate level, from the effects and impact of COVID-19. Not saying we're carriers at all, don't get that mistaken. What I'm saying is that on our workers, our families, people who go to work in this economy, they are frontline and often more exposed than other workers to this insidious disease. And then those effects impact children, impact the families. The data on children is not as robust as it needs to be, but the data that we do have also show that when our children do get this disease, it has a disproportionate, severely disproportionate effect and impact on children of color. So with all of these concerns and considerations, with 83% of our children and families being children of color, and our staff safety being a priority, we have been very deliberate, very systematic in coming to this recommendation that is before you. We have not rushed it. We have not felt like we had to be first. We felt that we had to be deliberate and take the time needed. That's why it's always been a working draft. From July 31st to this date, we have made over 20 substantial additions to the working plan. And last Friday, August 14, we submitted our remote-only plan as was required by the governor. And even at that time, we had not made a decision or a recommendation that we would bring forth to you about what we recommended, because we had not completed and still have not completed all of the community meetings and hearings with our parents and our staff and our many constituents to date. We're still continuing those. Now, what we are getting is we're moving toward a consensus, and that has becoming clearer and clearer. So for example, before me, I have data summaries from four main groups. And I'll go back to the scientific basis, but semi-scientific, when the survey data is accurate and done properly, it can be useful. And the surveys that we have from our parents, from our students, from our teachers and from our principals all indicate that they would feel more physically and psychologically safe if we began in a remote only reopening to the school year and then progressed toward a hybrid approach where we began to transition and bring in different populations of students and gradually increase that ratio over time. And by looking at what the conditions were at the time, the scientific basis, because that will always be the key to whether we remain remote and when we move to more hybrid forms of in-person student instruction. All throughout, we have followed the CDC guidelines and the national COVID data. That data has changed and is emerging differently all over the country, as you know, over these recent weeks. We still do not have this very deadly virus contained in, by any stretch of the imagination at a national level. There are still over 2,000 people dying every day from this disease. Many of us have family and or friends or associates that have passed from this disease. Every 42 seconds, someone is passing away from COVID-related effects. We have been in close contact with the Department of Health, the Erie County Department of Health, and our health advisory consultant team, very esteemed epidemiologists and pediatricians. I want to commend, especially at this time, Dr. Gil Burstein and the Erie County Department of Health, who have been extraordinary, collaborative, and helpful to us as we work out the details around testing for COVID and contact tracing for COVID. Very important set of responsibilities that they are going to be our prime supporters of. I had a long talk with Dr. Kuo today, and he, in short, supports the recommendation to open remotely. He makes very important points about it and says that any plan is only as good as its execution. And while he concurs with the data that says that the disease is not widespread here at this time, and that we are less than 1% or around 1% in the test positive cases in this community, Erie County, that we will need time to train students, for example, in the protocols of wearing masks, staying socially distanced throughout the school day, and all of the other things, washing hands, and remaining safe according to the strictest of guidelines. That doesn't happen if you just open up on day one in a hybrid model. You need time to train everyone in those very, very important safety protocols. He also says that there is a supply chain challenge right now with testing, and that if we start on day one with a hybrid model, that that supply chain would be stressed. There would be challenges with the testing and the need for testing, going into quarantine, and all of those associated factors would have a very disruptive effect to the school year, even under the best intentions. So in short, CDC, Erie County Department of Health, and our own health advisory consultants. Dr. Kuo will be our medical director for the entire year, and he is going to do a walkthrough. I've invited him to do walkthroughs with me, with our schools in the near future, so that we can see where we stand with following all of these guidelines and where the gaps might be and how we can immediately correct them. So between the scientific basis for starting schools in a remote learning only environment and our survey results from all of our major constituents, we are bringing forward a recommendation to start the year in a remote only environment. And we believe we are as prepared as we can be to do so, and certainly in a much better position than we were in the spring when we had to close down quickly. Dr. Darren Brown now will highlight a few of what a day looks like and when we will start, and then we will continue with the order of the presentation. Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Dr. Cash. Good evening, board members. So, some very important dates. September 1st, 2020 is the first day for teachers. That is in our approved calendar, and that will be the first day for professional development for teachers. Professional development will continue on September 2nd and 3rd. So teachers have 3 full days of professional development, really focused around remote learning and how to build the remote learning programs and classes so that they have their Schoology classes set up. They will also have social emotional learning training throughout those 3 days also. On Friday, September 4th, teachers will have their classroom setup day, because we are going to still ask teachers to come to the building and teach some days from their classroom. So they will have that classroom setup day on Friday, September 4th. But keep in mind, we do realize that many teachers like to get into their classrooms and set up prior to that. So we'll be working with our engineers and school principals to make sure that's able to happen. With that being said, principals are right now, along with the help from their associate superintendent, building their school schedules. Their guidance counselors and master schedulers are helping, and they're building their school schedules that will also work in the remote learning environment. So these are all things that are important and are taking place now, and those are the important dates that will start the school year. The first day for students is Tuesday, September 8th, the day after Labor Day, and that is when they will begin the remote learning in this report. Thank you, Dr. Cash and board members.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Myra Burden will talk about assessing technology needs, internet access, and provision of computers. Myra.
Thank you, Dr. Cash, and good evening, board members, and good evening, Board President Cotman.
And Mary, can you change the slide, please?
We've taken various approaches to assess technology connectivity within both our student and teacher population. So one of the major partnerships that we've established is with Charter Spectrum to analyze the internet access based on only addresses that are in our systems for teacher and students. So Charter Spectrum took that information, they cross-checked it with their internal records to identify addresses for which internet service is provided and is not provided. They have established a program called the Spectrum Stay Connected program, which is an enterprise program that I'll talk a little bit about in the next slide. But based on the scope of their service area and the eligibility for that program, the preliminary analysis yielded the following results. Over 21,000 locations were submitted to Spectrum for that analysis. 322 of those addresses were found to be duplicates, so we threw those out. 16,000 have internet access. So of all of our student and teacher addresses that we currently have in our database, 16,000 have active internet. 975 are not serviceable for this program. So that leaves 4,208 student and or teacher homes that are ready to be serviced, as there is no internet, and they would also be eligible for this program. We are continuing to take requests for internet access during our device distribution process, as well as the online form and our BPS helpline. In addition to the spectrum assessment, we are surveying our teachers and will soon be surveying our students to obtain data concerning the availability, the stability, and the reliability of internet access and the extent of students using and or sharing a home computer, as well as the need for a hotspot or a computer. So again, the teacher surveys are all already in progress. They were distributed last week, and they will continue to run through the end of this week at a minimum. Next slide, please. So to support the need, we are using a portion of the $9.1 million that was approved through Smart Schools to support the provision of internet access. So we have multiple options being considered for this approach. It could be all hotspots. It could be the Spectrum Stay Connected Enterprise Program, which, based on the data that I just shared with you, won't be sufficient because of the 975 addresses that are not serviceable. So more than likely, it will need to be a hybrid of the two. Spectrum Stay Connected Program is one that provides internet access to our student households, and then it would bill the district for the service on a month-to-month basis. So that means if the student family leaves the residence, then we would disconnect that service. And then if someone else takes up residence at that same address, we can restart the service again on a month-to-month basis. Spectrum provides the equipment and the support before, during, and after the installation. So it's not as labor intensive on the district because of what Spectrum is providing. Next slide, please. So provision of computers. As many of you know, at the onset of the pandemic, since March 17th, the IT team has been absolutely tremendous and amazing about getting devices in the hands of our students. So to date, we have distributed over 20,000 devices to students in grades 3 through 12, and those devices will continue to remain with those students. We began distributing additional devices for reopening last week on August 12th to those students who may not have picked up a device since March, those students that are newly enrolled to the district, as well as we're facilitating exchanges of devices to students who will be transitioning from an iPad to a laptop. So each household was assigned a specific date. That was included in a letter that was sent home to them. And we also utilized our school messenger auto calling system to send targeted messages to those individual families. And the distribution will continue through September 2nd. In order to support a full one-on-one deployment for our pre-K through second grade students, we're also using a portion of the Smart Schools emergency funding to support additional devices that are needed for those particular students. The team has begun the process of actively purchasing additional iPads for those grade levels. So as we continue the device distribution, we're being intentional about fully deploying devices to a full grade, starting with grade 2. And then any remaining grade levels in the interim will be supported with paper learning packets until we have those additional iPads in and we can deliver and distribute those to those students, to those remaining students. Okay, next slide. And at this time, I'll turn it over to our Chief Academic Officer, Anne Botticelli.
Good evening. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the instructional end of the remote learning process. So first, there's some terms that we need to define because they're going to become very common in our conversations. So a learning management system, or an LMS, is a system that will house our curriculum documents. For this function, we use Schoology, which we've had in the district for several years. So many teachers are familiar with it, although we continue to provide training. And a lot of that will happen on Superintendent Conference Day. So in that learning system, we can house curriculum content, which would include various documents, links to websites, videos or virtual conference links, basically any type of document you want students to have access to. You can also assign quizzes, and students have the ability to email their teachers directly. They can, pretty much only their teacher, but they can get an instant message. Schoology will be the platform that we use as our single source. So even though there may be other features of programs that we have, we can embed links in Schoology, because feedback that we heard from families over the spring was that it was difficult for them to juggle a lot of different platforms. Some teachers were using ClassDojo, some were using Remind, some used Schoology. And it was confusing if you had multiple students in the family, and or even if you had one student and three different teachers used a different platform. So to make life easier and to bring all of our resources together, we will be using Schoology pre-K to 12. However, that provides a lot of access, but it doesn't give you a complete conferencing mechanism. So what we are using for our virtual conferencing platform is Microsoft Teams. And we've started training with our administrators and teachers over this August. So Teams platform allows teachers to create a meeting link. And when students log into Schoology, they click on that link and it takes them directly into the Teams platform. It's similar to LifeSize or to Zoom in the sense that you would see the students and teachers, and the teacher could share her screen, share documents, share lessons with the students while they are interacting together on that platform. So between Schoology and Microsoft Teams, we will be able to provide a single point of access and have students have live classes with their teachers. Again, one of the things that we heard in the spring was that students missed that one-on-one interaction or that group interaction with their teacher, and they preferred to have a more scheduled approach to their work. So between using Schoology and Teams, we'll be able to provide that to the students. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about synchronous and asynchronous learning. And these are terms that I don't think any of us ever used prior to the spring of this year. So I define them every time I'm in any kind of session just to make sure we're all using them the same way. So synchronous learning happens in real time. That would be when we would use our virtual conferencing platform Teams. So it would be an experience like this. It would be a virtual classroom and the students would be live with the teacher. That could take a few different forms. It might be whole group instruction. So the teacher might schedule the class all together in one session. It could also be a small group. The teacher could invite certain students to come together at certain times to provide intervention, acceleration, to have different kinds of conferences that, like, so a social worker could also use that as a platform for conferencing too. And then we have something called sort of a virtual office hours approach. So the teacher would be able to have a live Q&A session with her students. So if she's assigned work that they're completing independently, she would be holding virtual office hours and they could log in and ask questions. So if they're confused by a particular problem, if they need support with the particular paper that they're writing, if she's holding virtual office hours, they can log in and have a conversation with the teacher. That's also a way that she can schedule the small group interactions. So synchronously would be either a whole class interaction, a small group interaction, or that ability to hold those Q&A sessions where the teacher's holding office hours the way a professor might in a college, and the students can log in and converse with the teacher. There's also something called asynchronous learning, which in a regular year would have throughout the dependent projects, writing essays, doing things that are independent of the teacher, even though they might be in the same space. So when we talk about asynchronous learning, the student who is obviously at home might be working independent of the teacher at that time. So while some students are working with the teacher during virtual office hours, another student might be working independently, either through a program like MobiMax or Zern or another of the platforms that the district provides to teachers. Or they could be working perhaps in Office 365 and writing a paper with a couple of their peers, because that also happens in real time. Kids can work together through Office 365. So there's a lot of different options for asynchronous learning, and many of those activities would be housed in Schoology. So the combination of Schoology and Teams allows the district to provide both synchronous and asynchronous learning opportunities for our students. Can you go to the next slide, please? Thank you. So I just want to talk a little bit about what a teacher's day might look like and what a student's day might look like if we are 100% remote. So a teacher would follow their typical schedule, their contractual schedule. So for example, if I was a seventh grade math teacher, I would still teach 5 periods of math a day to my students. The students would experience all the subjects that they normally have during a typical day. So if you were scheduled normally for your 4 core and a math class, and a music class, you would still experience those. Although some of that interaction would be asynchronous. So in a given day, you might have a synchronous class and then an asynchronous learning opportunity. While I'm working asynchronously, my teacher is holding virtual office hours and other students might be logging in to ask questions, or she might be pulling some of my peers in a small group while I'm home working, but I still have that opportunity to log in and ask questions into a virtual office hours. So the teacher would have, throughout the course of the week, that math teacher would have 5 periods of instruction, although 1 or 2 of them might be office hours. So as opposed to teaching a direct lesson, they might be pulling small groups or they might be running the Q&A, but that teacher is always teaching. The students might be experiencing some synchronous classes where they're with the teacher live face-to-face, and then some classes where they're working asynchronously on activities the teacher has assigned, but they'd still have that opportunity to log in and speak with the teacher if they had questions. In this model, we want to make sure that we are providing special consideration for students of our greatest need. So the students with disabilities who are currently in some of our smaller special classes, and also students who may be receiving related services, we are looking to phase those students back into the in-person instruction in an earlier time frame than the other students before they come back hybrid. So we want to make sure that we are looking out for the needs of those special populations. And then I've heard a lot of questions from staff members about what the role of a teacher aide or assistant might look like. So the BEST union has been fantastic. They've been working with us, and they've come up with a lot of things that would be appropriate to continue the support an aide or an assistant typically provides in a regular working day. They will be wonderful liaisons to our families. They are going to conduct wellness calls. They're happy to deliver food to families who aren't able to come pick it up themselves. They can assist the families with technology concerns. So in the beginning of the year, one of the things that they can start doing right away is connecting with families that they're assigned to make sure that the student has picked up a device, to make sure that the student has connectivity, to answer any questions the families might have. And teacher assistant lessons, so they support the teacher as she teaches the lesson to her students. I think there's one more slide.
Yes.
Thank you. So in this remote world, the role of the parent is fundamentally important to us. We need to make sure that they understand our systems so that they can support their students. So a few of the things that we're doing to make sure, for example, that they understand Schoology and Teams, we've created videos that have been are being translated into our top languages. Those are currently available on the website. They were created by the student leadership teams, the technology leadership teams, and so they walk a student or parent through the process of logging into Schoology no matter what device you're using, whether it's a mobile phone, an iPad, a Mac, a PC, just so everyone's comfortable with the process of logging in. And then they take them through other possibilities in Schoology itself. And we're also hosting live sessions. So right now, you can log in and interact with our technology student leaders, and they will show you live how to use Schoology, how to log into Schoology, what Teams will look like for you, because you actually log into a Teams platform when you join the group. And then they will be providing some information after one of our Facebook Live sessions as well. So parents who log into that can see it, and it will be preserved because those are archived. We're also encouraging parents to create parent accounts for Schoology and Parent Portal. So you all are probably familiar with Parent Portal. It's the one way that a parent can get in and look at a student's grades. It's our grading system as part of Infinite Campus. So we already had a mechanism to have students and to have parents create that account. And we're capitalizing on that to also allow them to create accounts in Schoology. So basically, a parent can create a Schoology account and shadow his or her students. So if I have I have four students, I create one Schoology parent account, and I can see what each of my students has been assigned, and then I can see what they've actually submitted. Because again, we heard feedback over the spring that parents wanted more information about what their students were doing and how to stay on top of their submissions to make sure that they weren't falling behind. So the Schoology parent accounts will address a large part of that gap. We also have the helpline help desk that's always in service, 816-7100. They field calls all year long, but they had a lot of calls over the summer as parents began to use help their students log into our summer platforms. And they'll continue throughout the school year to provide that support to any parent who has questions. Specifically, if a student can't remember their 900 number or can't remember their password, the help desk is the place to connect to. We're also asking each school to assign for each thing. So instead of having to contact six or seven different faculty members to get questions answered, they'll have one point of contact. In the beginning of the year, that faculty member or staff member will reach out to the family, again, to ask similar questions. Do you have your devices? Do you have connectivity? Do you need support with anything? Can we connect you with anyone to help you at home? You know, what can we do for you as a school? And then there'll be that consistent contact throughout the course of the year. No parent would obviously be prevented from reaching out directly to a teacher, but we wanted them to have this option of the one point of contact, and so that messages can go out that way and they can take questions and field them to the correct people. And then currently there are live drop-in centers at our four parent centers, so anyone can bring their devices to get support because occasionally there might be an issue with a device, and we know that, you know, it's better to have a live person looking at it when you feel like you need that level of support. So that continues, and School 28 is obviously our current site for distribution. Thank you.
Family liaison, Anne, anything about that?
I'm sorry, you know, I think the school liaison, family liaison is really the same thing.
Okay.
Bless you.
All right. Jim Weimer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cash.
Jim Weimer, our chief operations officer, just doing an incredible job with all of the responsibilities that he has, especially during this urgent time. If you could hit on some of the main points, Jim, that would be greatly appreciated. Safety and operations.
Thank you, Dr. Cash, and good evening, board members. The BPS.
Next slide, Admir, next slide, please. Thank you.
So our BPS safety and operations team has developed plans following all CDC and New York State Department of Health guidelines and continues to adapt as changes become available to us. The safety of our students and staff is paramount. Masks will be required of all students and staff when in school buildings, as well as on the bus for students when they begin to come back to school. The district currently has 500,000 masks in stock for staff and students who may need one, and the ability to procure more as necessary. Social distancing. When BPS students return to school, it will be critical to provide spaces that promote social distancing and ensure the safest possible environment. Signage and floor decals are being installed to show 6 feet of social distance in buildings in needed areas. Main offices are being outfitted with polycarbonate dividers. We have already had many of our central office administrators come back to work in some of our school buildings. So we've had the ability to try out and check out what we're doing and how we can make that better. The district has also engaged Canon Design Architects to assist in the development of our reopening plan. Utilizing our strategic plan data on BPS school buildings to determine building capacities. Canon has developed a tool to analyze square footage of instructional spaces with social distancing requirements, which then determines the student capacity in an instructional space. Our associate superintendents, along with district architects and engineers, are developing plans for schools and offices as we speak. It has been a tremendous tool for us. They did a lot of work in the Chicago public schools, and we're really looking forward to implementing their recommendations. All new alcohol-based hand sanitizer dispensers are being installed strategically throughout the school buildings and facilities, including classrooms, building entries and exits, and where hand washing is not easily accessible. Desktop hand sanitizers have been distributed to all returning central office staff as well. An adequate number of drinking fountains will be converted to bottle fillers. The district will encourage the use of water bottles. Alternate means of providing drinking water will be available where necessary. Hospital-grade disinfectant wipes and HBV high residual sanitizer is in stock and will be used in multiple disinfecting procedures. Facility cleaning. The Buffalo Public Schools Plant Department has developed upgraded sanitation protocols in accordance with public health guidelines. In accordance with these protocols, both the frequency and the intensity of building cleaning will be increased. HVAC and air filtration. The BPS reopening plan provides written guidance on how to maintain adequate code required ventilation, natural or mechanical, as designed. Specific plans for each building will be incorporated into the Canon plans, as we have buildings with many different types of systems and different ages and sizes. We are reviewing and upgrading all HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning settings to ensure all spaces are provided adequate ventilation. HVAC filters will continue to be changed at recommended intervals with MERV 11 rated or greater filters, depending on the ability of our systems to function properly with them. We continue to collaborate with our stakeholders and adapt on preparation for an eventual safe reopening of our facilities with safety as our number one priority.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Alan Acala will present the next slide, communications. Alan Acala, our communications director.
Thank you, Dr. Cash. Good evening, board members. I think we all agree that in this COVID-19 school closure, nothing has been more important than communication. It's been constant. I have the help of the multilingual education department, who is ready to turn translations on a dime. And the webmaster has been very, very good at getting things on the web for us, and also my cabinet colleagues who have specialized knowledge that we need everybody to know. We need our parents to know, along with everyone that we consult with. The modes of communication that will be ongoing are the automated text, voice, and email messages that we employ through our all call system. We have a BPS dedicated webpage, and that changes constantly as new information comes in, and it will continue to do so. We urge everyone to look at the webpage for the most up to the minute information. We also put things out on social media, which we find is very popular. And we found out with our community meetings with Facebook Live, we have quite a lively and engaged community there. Local media through print media, radio, digital, and television. We look to our media colleagues to help us get the word out to the public. We have weekly digital newsletters that are all encompassing. They give a good view of what's happened that week. And as things change, those become important every Friday to see what might have happened that week that people may have missed. And those go district-wide. They go to everyone, and I do send them to the local media also. The two-way virtual community meetings that we've been holding have been so successful and so well-run. We get a little bit better with every single one of them. And it's not anything that we think will be stopping in the near future. I'm sure that this will keep going. In a virtual world, that's what we have for communication. And we will continue to go. That's our best way to have two-way communication right now, which is what we're interested in. We also have the BPS telephone support helpline. The thing about that is we started out with different numbers for different topics. And as we saw the things that were coming in, I was the miscellaneous line. We developed new lines so that we had more choices, more options for parents to choose from when they were looking for up-to-the-minute information from us. The multilingual division of multilingual education has their own way of communicating with families, and they can do real-time transfer texts that are translated. And so people can ask a question of someone, of a teacher, for instance, or a staff member in their language. It gets translated, it's answered in English, it gets translated again, and it goes back to that person. We're trying not to leave anyone out of this essential communication right now. In the event of emergency closure, when we do find ourselves back in schools, we will handle it much the same way that we handle weather closings. And there will be communications and scheduling or stay-at-home orders so that people aren't going out to a bus or coming out to a school. We'll use our all call in the appropriate languages. We'll do web alerts, social media, and again, notification to all local media.
Elena?
Yes.
Did you conclude?
I am done unless anyone has any questions. Yes.
Well, hold on. Okay, so Elena's concluded. Thank you, Elena, and thank you all staff members for your excellent preparation and for your presentations this evening. Madam Chair, Mrs. Cotman, I turn it back to you.